Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, Tony from the Pathway Studios. Johnston proper. Dave, I don't mean to say this in a very, Lord knows that I hope this isn't prophetic, but you look like you're going to be martyred because your face is glowing.
Glowing like an angel?
I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah. Terrifying.
I know. I get that a lot.
Here's the thing is like, biblically, sometimes it's pretty cool, like people with glow, like Moses, you know, gets to walk behind God and he meets him in the tent and he's glowing, right? Mm-hmm. But like, it really seems that in the New Testament, things really shift. And if you see a glowing man, he's got something's going
he's
on.
He's got you minutes to live.
Yeah, he's on the outs.
He's not long for this world.
And I don't want to say bad things are happening because I think it's a positive deal in the long run. I'm just saying a glowing man is, if he tries to grab your arm, just know where you're heading.
Yeah, he's the holy grenade marker. You got to be careful.
All right, you're listening live from the Path. Here we got going on the show tonight. Mike's got advice on Dear Life from the Path. I've been snooping around at art. Hey, we're going to talk about the Pope.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I'm not even sure what we're going to talk about with the Pope, be honest with you. So, he's just rolling around in my mind. I don't think social media and frankly regular media does not know how to handle the Pope, and I dig that about him.
Yeah,
he seems to be able to really hose off a wide swath of people, but also make happy and elevate a wide swath of people. He's a very interesting character, and so I'm interested to see, you know, like if you guys had to. Give me not a pie chart necessarily, but like lay me the landscape of your Facebook feed of people's reaction to the Pope. I'm interested for some quick digestion of what that is. So I'm be thinking of that. I'm gonna ask you, and we'll hit that up. Also, I saw doggone it. I had a few articles that I ran into. Oh, there was one guy. One of the questions was, for what we believe as Christians, is it reasonable to think that in the near future we could be committed to an insane asylum? And research points to yes. So we're going to talk about that. The likelihood of Christians being put into an insane asylum for core beliefs of Christianity. And there's current research out there that says, yes, there is. Also, they found streams of water, like pretty good proof that there's streams of water on Mars. And it brings up the perennial question, which is, I don't know, how are we supposed to digest the possibility of life on another planet?
Hey.
Yeah.
God put it there. God put streams of water on Mars. That's what I thought when I heard the news. They're like, hey, there's streams of water on Mars. And I thought, well, sweet placement, Lord. We finally found it.
I like that God has set out what is equivalent to a cosmic treasure hunt.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. I mean,
terrestrial bingo.
I can't just imagine your old man sitting in the living room, and you come rolling in there all excited, and you're like, Dad, I found the car in the driveway. What is his reaction? You know? It's always been there. I've always seen it there, son. It's been there for a while. You've just now found it. And I kind of feel like the same reaction is coming. Like, we found this thing. We think we're going to make something great and huge out of it. We didn't put it there in the first place. We have no control over it. We saw it from afar. We're not going to get there for another 70 years anyway. It's just an odd thing to get all hooped up
Yeah,
about.
But there might be an amoeba there, Mike.
Well,
there's an amoeba.
Well, I mean, I suppose there could be an amoeba.
Here's what's going to be the thing. We're going to get 100 years from now, and NASA's going to come out with a big deal, and they'll be like, hey, proof of amoeba found on Mars, and that's how information is going to slowly drip from Mars until Buva lives there.
Here's what we want. What we want to know is can we put a dome there and live there? You know, that's what we want to know. They keep showing up with these side questions. What we want to know is can we live there or can't we?
Yes.
Working on that.
The answer is yes.
So
hey, I want to live there.
Like right now, we can live there. We can just move.
Yeah. Remember, they're sending. We talked about that story. Yeah. They're sending. Remember that woman's going and she's leaving her family behind.
No, they're just going to visit.
No,
there's no visit.
It's a suicide
at this
mission.
Point, it's a one-way trip.
You don't make
it
back.
It's only a one-way trip because of the distance. They can't get there and back.
Right.
It's not because they're setting up prosperity there.
Right.
Well, that's not the same thing, is it?
You know what I find interesting about research like that is it is very people-centric. Like there's a bit of blindness that says, hey, if there's running water there, life may be able to be there. And what we're really saying is like what Mike said, like can we live there? Because I mean, is it not within the realm of possibility that there are alternative beings of which do not need running water or oxygen in our accord or like In fact, most space movies are based upon the thought process that they live off something else.
If I may, I mean, maybe there's aliens or whatever, but if, say, God, you know, he loves the human race, he, you know, sent Jesus to us, but doesn't that mean, I don't know, does he not love the aliens? Maybe did he send alien Jesus to the aliens?
Well, hey, man, Alien Jesus sounds like an awesome new TV show.
Here's what you should consider is that we will arrive on Mars to find a bunch of naked people and a tree that still stands. And they'll say, hey, this place is great. Yeah, we never ate from the tree. Everything seems all right.
That's the alternate universe where Adam and Eve were like, yeah, man, Satan, we're supposed to stay away from that tree. So, it sounds like we're going to stay away from that tree.
Oh, man, that's a good point. Well, somebody else got it right.
According to the multi-universe theory, every choice leads in one of two directions and creates different universes. Yeah, so
Herrick's a goat in a different universe.
Somewhere out there, according to the theory, there was an Adam and Eve who chose not to eat from the tree.
I think God sits up there and says, why aren't you guys more like Mars, Adam and Eve? Are you kidding me?
Oh, man, I didn't think of that. All the cooler stuff to do upon Christ's return. We've got the really small bucket of things that we're like, this is what I'm going to do in heaven. And I feel like it's a much bigger opportunity than what we've really thought of. Although, hey, you know what I thought of last week? Here's what I thought. As I thought, at the return of Christ, the earth will be restored and kind of all these things, like we'll still be able to do some of the things that he's created that are beautiful and lovely, but mm-hmm. but certain things won't be around anymore. And I think the medical profession is one of them. So like, because there won't be any sick people to heal. And so if you want to do medicine, you really need to get that in now. Like I could be a gardener right. both here and at Christ's return, but I feel like I will not be a medical doctor at Christ's return.
Herrick, how's Ben have it wrong here?
I think it'll just change. It'll no longer be about the treatment of disease. I think it'll be about the maintenance of health.
It's a dog and pony show. You know what? You're well. Yeah. Next.
No,
hey, you're doc, all right. It'll, next. Just wanted to hear how good I'm doing. You're doing great.
Okay, well, at least won't be the same experience.
Yeah. No.
What about an HMO HR director? Probably not, right?
Yeah.
Those will go away.
I'm just saying, like, if you want to be part of the full swath of human experience, I would consider doing now the things that will not be available at Christ's return.
Criminal.
From the same perspective.
I was going to say, I think there's a couple of things we probably shouldn't be trying to do while we're here.
Okay, 100 years ago, they used to deliver mail on ponyback. I mean, they don't do that.
But I could.
Going across the country.
Here's the deal. Yes. I could do that.
Yes.
And, for funsies. But, like, it would be real awkward to be like, hey, I know the Christ has returned and everything is restored, but can I take your tonsils out? Like, I feel like that's weird.
Yeah.
Until Jesus shows up and goes, this is what these are for, you idiots.
Hey, Jesus, can I take that guy's appendix? No! Leave him alone!
Hey, yeah, that's the height of human pride is to say, God created something and we pull it out of the body and say, eh, it doesn't really do anything.
This is useless.
Left over from when the Lord made mistakes.
Here's what we're going to find out is that the appendix or the gallbladder are the cure, the inherent cure to diarrhea. Like if you would,
that'll be a shocker. To me. Yeah,
that's my guess.
That's going to be Ben's first question. Jesus comes back. Ben walks up. Hey, Jesus. All right, something's been killing me. You know that whole appendix thing? You know how we say it's useless?
Does it cure
and then that
diarrhea?
Gallbladder? Seriously? Does it take care of that situation? And Jesus is like, yes, Ben, it does. He goes, yes.
But I still have both, and I know.
Oh, jeez.
You know, what I was thinking when they were having that lunar eclipse the other day is a bunch of people.
By the way, you Mike describes yesterday. It as they were having one. Like someone's like, putting it on.
And here's why they were having it.
I
went out to look at it. And I had to give two rips about it. You know, I mean, I went to go out to see it just like everybody else. And the kids were all excited about it. I'm like, man, I mean, I kind of understand the gist of it. It's going to turn a slight color of red. I have a TV. You know, like, I mean, people in the movies did a way better job of this. But, like, the Facebook was blowing up with, like, this end time stuff. And I thought, you know, here's the thing about end times. Either you have an extremely unimaginative, crappy god who introduces himself with a slowly turning red moon,
or it goes way quicker.
Or you're paranoid. You know, like if you really thought that the Lord that like when especially if you're a Christ follower, right? If you read the book of Revelation, let's say you don't get the entire story, but you've picked out the parts you love and you think, yeah, the Lord's going to come back and it's going to be a scene. And really, by your definition, a scene is 45 minutes of a moon turning a slightly different color. I think you really underestimate the power of the God that you claim to serve.
Yeah, yeah. We've set up the Return of Jesus like it's a 1987 Tony Award winner. Yeah, right? Like it's real theatrical. Big, you know. I feel like if the Bible's clear on nothing else, it's that you will know. Like it's not like you're gonna have to anticipate or think, oh, maybe this is it. I feel like you were gonna know when the Lord of the Universe returns to the earth. And it's not like, oh, well, it's halfway through the moon being covered up and the dust particles in business. Maybe it's really happening.
Yeah, I kind of think everything else that happens is going to be a response to him instead of, you know, the prelude to him showing up. It'll be he shows up and then everything else gets turned upside down, not the other way
right,
around.
Jesus, you're on in 10. Send out the moon.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Make
Let
it
them
appear
know I'm
as
coming.
If it's a regular thing, you know, like every some years. You know, this happens. Make it appear regular, but then I'll sneak in like a thief in the night. That'll really get him rolling.
Yeah. Give him the old onesie twosie. That's what you do.
Better wait for that moon.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, can Christians be committed? Can we live on Mars? There was an interesting, speaking of the Pope, there was an article in the, called Is America Post-Christian? And for some reason they've chosen a picture of the Pope with his hands in his head. Hold on, let me see if I can get you a shot of this thing. There he is. You guys catch him?
Oh, yes.
Oh, no, he says. Here's the deal. He's
Pope
praying.
He's, we lost.
He's, everyone looks disappointed when they're praying, right? Like everyone's got their kind of their head down, their hands near their eyes. It's like everyone got bad news. The Bears lost again. So anyway, but the article was, Is America Post-Christian? And it was kind of funny. Actually, here, I'll do this one real quick. Because I think I had a different reaction to this article than the guy that was intending it to be. But here's what it says. It says, Ross Douthat is being all non-Eeyore-ish about Pope Francis' visit and what that might say about Christianity in the West. And here's a quick excerpt from it. He writes, in a truly post-Christian society, would so many people find an Imitatio Christi thrilling and fascinating and inspiring? Did I say that right? Is it Imitatio? It doesn't matter.
I'm not sure what you're saying, Ben.
It's Imitatio Christi. Imitation of Christ? I don't know. Would okay. so many?
It's a Mario.
Is it? No.
Yeah, like if you saw a little baby Mario. It's a Mario.
Can we take away his microphone?
Would so many people be moved on a deep level by an image like this one? Wouldn't a truly post-Christian society of that sort, of that certain 20th century totalitarians aspired to build, be repulsed instead by images of weakness and deformity? And then further, in a fully secularized society, would so many people who have drifted from the practice of religion, I have many of my fellow journalists, particularly mine, care so much whether an antique religious organization and its aged celibate leader are in touch with their experiences? So he's basically making the case that for all this business that the church is saying that we're in a post-Christian society, look at people's reaction to the Pope, and maybe we should understand this differently. And then, so that was his quote from Ross Douthat, and then he continued, the author of the article says, oh, I don't know, I doubt it. I wish it were so, but I just can't see it. Believe me, I'm quite pleased to see so much excitement among my Catholic friends, and I've been among them this week at Villanova over Francis's visit. Even pals who are not theologically inclined to be Francis fans are feeling great this week. As regular readers know, I am much more of a Benedict XVI man, but Francis sometimes says things that challenge me in a good way. That said, I'm not convinced that public enthusiasm for Pope Francis is a sign that we are not yet post-Christian. Let me explain why. So I don't know, first of all, any gut reactions to either of those positions?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of him since he's a Benedict XVI fan. The guy was bad news.
Herrick says Benedict XVI bad news anyway. Yeah. All right, then.
So. Hey, for us non-Catholics, can you tell me why?
He's the guy who stepped down.
Yeah.
Okay, still not helping much.
Yeah, why is that such a big deal?
He's basically trying to turn the Catholic world into some really weird... I'm trying to think how to describe it. He's basically driving the bus in the wrong direction, and he realized it. And
so, he realized it and bailed on his own?
Yeah, the only way to get rid of a pope is either he dies or he steps down, and he chose to step down, which I give him props for that. But, yeah, he was driving the bus in very much the wrong direction.
Eric says wrong direction.
And he realized it but didn't fix it?
Right, correct, he just stepped down, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't like this guy either.
Like, everything in him was pointing towards one direction. He knew that was the way that he would be driving the bus and realized this probably isn't the right thing to do. And so he pulled stops on it. And he's very much a Roman Catholic insider and trying to reverse time effectively in terms of Catholic culture, trying to bring things back socially to the 1800s or even earlier. I mean, he was yeah, it was just a very difficult and very awkward thing for the Catholic Church if they had followed his leadership.
When was that?
What's that?
When was his era?
This was between John Paul II and...
Yeah, that means nothing to me. I'm not Catholic.
And Francis, like, it just...
Is this the 1900s?
Like it's like 3 years ago.
Yeah, from 3 years ago to...
Well, that guy,
I think
it was... the last guy who stepped in.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. I didn't know that was like 15th century.
I was thinking this was something like 400 years ago. I'm not going to lie.
No. This was just... We're talking the past 2 decades.
Crap, okay, I need to read more.
I know, right? Hey, man, can you guys do a class on this?
I was like, I got nothing on the Facebook thing, because I'm like... I skipped everything. I don't care. I don't care what the Pope did.
he's a diehard fundamentalist. Huh. He's like he rubs me the wrong way in every way that I can imagine. He's all about policy, and there's nothing about him that reminds me of Jesus. And part of that's because I just don't know the guy well enough. But from the way that he led the church, it really made it very difficult for me to enjoy Catholics.
Eric's not a fan.
But on the other hand, then there's this new Pope, and everything about him reminds me of Jesus. I mean, even the way he handles media, the way that he blows off politicians to go have a meal with the homeless. I mean, everything about this guy reminds me of Jesus, and that's why he's getting such a very diverse response. People who, you know, they've got their agenda set up, who would probably have problems with Jesus, kind of have problems with this Pope.
So here's why I have a hard time with him, because, like, I agree with you. I really like the guy, right? Mm-hmm. But I can't understand. I can't get past the fact that he's part of a hierarchy that I just don't. Mm-hmm. I don't see as necessary at all.
And to be fair, he kind of treats it the same way. I mean, he doesn't really live in that kind of position. He doesn't take on the mantle of all the pomp and circumstance and things like that. Instead, he leads more by example and not based on position and authority. Instead, it's just, hey, here's how we should all be following Christ. And he doesn't get into that hierarchy type stuff. He really ignores a lot of the Roman Catholic political machine and says, nuts to that, that there's nothing Jesus about that. Instead, we need to just be following Jesus very simply. And I think the more you see how he is in terms of as a pope compared to a lot of the other popes, you're going to find a lot of Jesus in him.
So, I mean, this is a thing that scares me, and it may just show my immaturity as a Christ follower, right? But I'm afraid to like the guy because he's part of a hierarchy system that I think is unnecessary, not set up by Christ.
Right? So, I'm the same way. I mean, I don't come from a Catholic background, and there's nothing about it that I feel compelled to join the Roman Catholic Church about. But I can still like and support someone who, frankly, smells like Jesus.
Yeah.
And say, hey, what you're doing, I like what you're doing. I want to see more of it. I'd like other people to follow that. And what's great is, you know, with the size of the Roman Catholic Church, he's already got a lot of followers. But what he's doing is he's pointing him towards Jesus. He's not just saying, hey, come follow me. It's let's go follow Jesus.
But Dan puts him in the I don't care category. Mm-hmm. Dan?
Yeah, I've never been a big Pope guy. I mean, I just... So I don't have enough information. I don't study him. I don't read about him. I don't if I see an article, I skip it. It's not relevant to me.
Well, that's not just a casual, it doesn't affect me any. That's purposely ignoring.
Yeah, yeah. It has nothing to do with my world that I live in personally.
I don't get that. Like, he's a...
I'm not saying we're not, like, on the same...
No, yeah, but,
know,
yeah, but what
Jesus
I'm saying...
Jesus or anything. It's I'm just saying it's a...
He's, by any reasonable measure, the most influential, or potentially influential of Christ followers. Like... Mm-hmm. Of all the stuff that you would read in a given day, I feel like information about him seems like it does have a dose of relevance to your life, right? Like, otherwise, how many articles you read about some other evangelical somewhere talking
exactly,
about somewhere?
I don't read any of them. I'm kind of doing my own thing. I read, you know, I just don't.
He's the Billy Graham of the last right. 5 years.
I never really followed Billy Graham. I mean,
and that's the thing is you don't need an intercessor to get to Jesus.
Yeah,
you
just, yeah. I have Jesus. I've got the Holy Spirit living in me. And...
Yeah, and that's what's cool is you don't need a Tim Tebow. You don't need a
yeah. It's not
know,
like I don't like
Billy Graham
them or anything. I'm not like against. I just okay. Yeah. Anyway,
all you really need is just one person to lead you to Jesus, and then just start following Jesus from there on. So, in as much as I'm a fan of the Pope and I like what he does and support his ministry, I don't need him to be my intercessor to Jesus.
No, and I don't think that was my question. I'm having trouble buying that you don't read anything written by anybody that loves Jesus. Well, I'm not buying that one bit.
Yeah, that's probably an
Facebook
extreme
article post all the time with people stuff written by about other people.
I mean, I will listen to someone who's teaching scripture or something. I will listen to that. But I don't, like, I'll flip through the channels and there was all kinds of Pope stuff on. I didn't stop on any of it. I just didn't care what he was saying or what he was doing or where he was visiting. I didn't care where he stopped for a sandwich. I mean, I just didn't care, you know?
You know, the reason I like the guy is because he's good at everything that I suck at, right? Like, I will hide in the Bible and that man will hit the streets with the Bible in his hand talking to folks about Jesus, right? Everything that I will bury myself in, he does outright. That's why I like the guy. He's good at everything that I suck at, and I appreciate that about
him. You know, I'll tell you this: the thing that I think where I became uncomfortable with some of the conversation that I saw around him. Like, I'm obviously in the same bucket. I'm not a Catholic for a reason. There's that hierarchy. It's not even just, oh, I don't think it's right. I actually think it's a problem. I think it introduces a misunderstanding of our relationship with God, and frankly, the basis for Scripture is iffy. So, but beyond that. From an American political perspective, the things that I saw people disagreeing with the Pope on was way more a defense of the American way of life than it was a biblical understanding of kingdom. And that were some of the things that I'm disappointed in from a Christian discussion perspective, is the things that that people were upset about, where I otherwise might have some agreement with him on ideological lines. It was almost all the arguments pointed back to the status of America, the founding principles, our economic system, all these things that weren't where it seems like the discussions were sociological, people oriented discussions, faith oriented discussions from the Pope side. What I saw a lot was political posturing on the other side of it, and like I was actually pretty disappointed that, and I'll give you an example I'll give you what I think is a good example of where this lands, and it has to do with universal healthcare. Mm-hmm. So, like, the truth is, take away how it's provided. Do I have a desire that everybody have access to healthcare so that they can be treated when they are sick and be made well when they're not right? Yes, I have no reason, absolutely no reason on earth to not want that for everybody. Whether I agree that the government is the right group to do that, either efficiently or well, is a completely reasonable discussion. But the thought process that says, you know, it's just not something we are concerned about as Christians, that people can be cared for when they're not well, like, I think that's a ludicrous discussion. It's a ludicrous discussion. But, like, I'm not seeing enough of discussion that says, hey man, we want the same thing, but turning it over to the government isn't the answer. I can listen to that. I can listen to that discussion. What I found though was people that I'm supposed to be trusting to run our country hinged on defending capitalism to me and not starting from a premise that says, hey, actually, I care about this too. I really do care about this. And like, there was a number of things like that type of discussion that I thought, we got to be real careful when you're going to pick a fight with Jesus, right? Like, are you arguing about how America works, or are you arguing about things that Jesus cared about? And the Pope is not Jesus. I get that, right? But like, the foundation of the things that we're talking about, you have to be very careful about what you're willing to go to, like, die on a hill for. And if it's our method or our way of making money or the way that our economy works, in blindness to how that impacts the people that Jesus seemed to care an awful lot about, and I think that we're called to, I think we got to be real careful about the size of the megaphone that we use to have that conversation in such a blind manner. Mm-hmm. And so that would be the thing that where agree with him, disagree with him, I don't know that I really care. And frankly, there's problem. When you give speeches, you don't have to deal necessarily with people asking you a bunch of questions. There are implications to doing some of these altruistic things. There are implications to how people live, like the people on the other side of the issue live, to otherwise solve problems in the way that the Pope talks about. But we can't act like it's an outrageous mandate, because I think to a certain extent they're biblical mandates. And I think there's some blindness in how we're talking about some stuff like that. That was, if I have a disappointment in how people that otherwise would ideologically agree with interact with the Pope, it would be that. As our first reaction was, hey, he shouldn't be talking about climate change. I don't care. I don't, you know, like, that's not a, besides being good stewards of the earth, that's not a tremendous biblical issue for me. I'm not sure the science is settled. I think you can have a reasonable debate on that. But, like, when we're talking about, I care more about preserving our way of life, of which I make money, than I care about how someone is otherwise taken care of, or our society has figured out a way to provide for folks that need it, then I think there's just an element of blindness there. And I'm not even advocating that, that the thought of a universal health care provided through the government is the right answer. I'm just saying that's the right question. And I feel like we're, to a certain extent, ignoring things like that on ideological, political grounds, as opposed to saying, yes, we're asking the right question. I just think we can solve it better.
And what's sad is I think Jesus, I mean, he really got involved in all of those things. I mean, he, by his example, you could see he was getting involved in healthcare. As he was going around Palestine, even though that wasn't exactly the center point of his mission and mandate, he would get involved in these things. He cared about it as though he was the Lord of all.
Yeah.
And so he seemed to have a stake in everything that he was getting involved in. It didn't mean that everything was his priority. I mean, some of the things, like revealing that he was the Messiah, he said, no, we need to put that on the back burner. But, you know, everything belongs to God. And so he was wanting to look at how can we glorify God with everything that happens, every policy. And realistically, when it comes to health care, I don't know if the government can do it, or I don't know if the churches can do it. They're awfully disorganized at the moment. So
yeah,
they don't seem like they can quite cover the scale. I'd love it if they could, but maybe someday, you know, both are providing competing free healthcare systems, and let the populace decide between going to the free church-based clinics and the government-based clinics. And
it tends to be where the church is doing really a good job at healthcare is overseas in different mission. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where it's happening.
Yeah.
And over here, you spend a big money going to a hospital that might have the name of a church on it,
mm-hmm.
Mercy, you know, whatever. Yep. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what transitioned. That's something I have not researched. You know, mm-hmm. But I think in the beginning, a lot of them were outreach centered, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and then somewhere along the line, I don't know, maybe the government came in and told them, you know, but I don't know, but. So we know we can do it. We have done it. We're doing it now in other mm-hmm. places.
Right.
It's how do you do it here, right. mm-hmm. you know, and meet the standards that mm-hmm. The government's put on us?
Yeah, and that is the right discussion, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's something, let's get on board with that I care about that. I very much care about that, and let's find the right way to solve it, as opposed to, because it hasn't been something our party platform has traditionally been for, that we're all hot and bothered about the Pope because he brought it up as if it matters that people get care. Like, that's dumb. Mm-hmm. That's a dumb thing, and that's where we've misprioritized what kingdom we're actually in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we have to be careful. And to a certain extent, that's one of the reasons I like... I'm interested in the types of things that the Pope is talking about, because it actually becomes a little bit revealing, right? Mm-hmm. Like you find out what people really care about, because they're pressed by there is not a legitimate world. He is like the only world leader, like the guy that's literally responsible for the whole world. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean you understand what I'm saying? It's not obviously everybody, right? But like everyone's fighting for their own little enclaves of stuff. And, like, he legitimately could go anywhere in the world in any country and have some level of responsibility as far as he's concerned for people in that country. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he bears a potential influence that no one really has. And so I think it has an impact on our world. But it's interesting to see what people really care about, what they prioritize in light of the things that he talks about. Mm-hmm. Primarily looking at things that we care about from our political system versus things that he's talking about that are people-oriented, of which he doesn't have a responsibility to do necessarily, but he gets to start to have that conversation and then watch people have to react to it. So
I think the disappointing responses seem to be coming from just the issue of, is Jesus part of your life or is he Lord of your life? If he's part of your life, then there's also room to be American and all those different types of identities. But if he's Lord of your life, then that means that any allegiance that you have to America has to be filtered through the fact that he is Lord first and foremost. And all those other great American values that you have to be understood through him. Otherwise, they need to be chucked. And if they're not, if Jesus is just part of that crowd of your life, then yeah, you could disagree with the Pope because he's maybe advocating something that's not so capitalistic that you might like.
It does seem kind of odd, though, that like we try our best in America to celebrate and point people through our what we think to be a God-ordained democracy, mm-hmm. when we're actually, if we're pointing him towards Jesus, you're heading towards a benevolent dictatorship.
Yeah.
Like, that's where we're going. That's what the kingdom that we're mm-hmm. pointing you to. But we only choose to celebrate it through our capitalistic, democratic society. And if you can't get on board with that, you're out, you know, and we are very upset at you. And it does seem kind of, I don't know, it's an odd conversation to have, right? Yeah.
So and maybe that rounds out. So, Mike, what has been what's been the tenor of your Facebook feed when it comes to the Pope?
I've gotten some. I've gotten quite a few. He's a false prophet, and sent directly by the devil to corrupt things. Not very many. I'm not friends with a whole lot of Catholics, so I don't get a lot of attaboys for the Pope.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a couple articles people were posting on Facebook about how he's revitalizing the Catholic Church, and then an article right next to it was like, Christianity is in the tanker. It's not doing very well. I thought that was kind of funny that, like, the Christian church is finally on fire because everybody loves this Pope. But then it turns out that no one is even part of the Christian faith anymore, according to the feed right next to it. And so, but I do, I get a lot of the false prophet stuff. Like, he's just the worst of the worst and everybody hates him. And you know, he's disrupting everything, which I found to be unbiased.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. People are weird. People are,
You know, if all of these crowds that were jumping up and down and screaming and all the news media, they were all excited about his visit, were motivated to follow Christ at a higher level, I'd be his biggest fan.
So
this isn't a him thing. I'm just saying his position.
So I actually think that would be missed. I think it's doing that. I actually think that he is having that that impact on people.
We will see. I doubt it. I think the
you would never know
their religion.
Never know that. You don't read articles about.
Oh no, I just know things.
If he would do this, and I would never know, so he will never do it.
I mean, you know, I've told you this before. I worked at Burger King when the last time a Pope came to Iowa.
Yep.
And I was a teenager in the 70s, and people were walking from Merle Hay Mall to, how far is it out to Living History Farms? I mean, they were walking miles. They were walking past my Burger King and coming in to get a snack. And I mean, the point is, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people. There was no impact in Des Moines. And he left, and it was like, people were like, oh, that was a cool. And then they went back to their I worked with a guy who was excited because he was Catholic and sons all went to Catholic school and everything.
Yep.
And it had no impact on his life other than it was really exciting. A celebrity came, and that was really cool. And for a week, they were,
yeah. Yeah, but like you're someone showing up at your church service. They don't love Jesus when they leave. And then they're like, Dan is ineffective. He doesn't love Jesus at all. He is of no effect to anybody. That's not a fair comparison.
You're kind of missing him for the crowd, I think.
Yeah.
Is that you're he's a celebrity. So he's right. Going to attract crowds no matter where he goes. And those crowds are going to come there and they're going to swoon because they're in the presence of a celebrity. And they're going to go home and their life is exactly the same as it was before.
Well, I'm talking about like people I worked with who, this guy's a devout Catholic who tied to the church and have his kids in Catholic school and went every single Sunday, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
There's still no impact.
The exact perfect example of a fan who would be there and recognize this guy's a celebrity. And yeah, you're right. Didn't respond to it.
Isn't that the exact situation Jesus was in? Right before he said offensive things and everyone went away.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, so you always run the same risk, right? That like you're saying things that other and the mix of things that you are saying attracts people to you, and then at turn pushes them back away because they don't really want to invest in it. And then what's left is the people is a much smaller group that actually responds.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the day after 9/11, you had Congress out singing "God Bless America" on the steps of the Capitol, and half of them were pagans, you know, or more. You know, that didn't last. You know, it was an emotional woo-hoo.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's true in your local church.
Yeah.
Right? That happens everywhere. It's just, I think it's probably a grander scale on him simply because of the number that he has influence on. Mm-hmm. I would say that I'm not, I think it would be false to assume that you're going to see 70% of the people who, you know, were at a casual relationship with the church, or frankly, what is more of a standard Catholic relationship, which is you show up, you tithe, you leave, you repent, you come back. Like, I don't expect you're going to see a 70% flip of that, but like, I think it is it's not an accurate narrative to say that you're not seeing impact with people that are otherwise reflecting the types of behaviors that he advocates or talks about. Like, I've read a numerous articles that kind of talk about where that is shifting. I just, you know, I think it's probably it's a pretty high bar to eat 70% of people get anything right that they're going to flip on.
I just know that this dude talks more about Jesus than most people that I know, most popes that I've ever heard of, right? Like, in my lifetime, I have never witnessed a pope talk about Jesus the way he talks about Jesus, nor serve the way he serves. So I mean, I suppose you can put it in the mind frame that, like, whether the pope job is a legit job or not, obviously I disagree. I don't think it is a legit job. But, like, as far as a dude going out there talking about who Jesus is and becoming part of the kingdom, that guy's doing a good job of it. That's what I know. Mm-hmm.
So the premise of the article, though, was...
Ben, we're not done with it. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So, well, maybe I'll just tell you this. Maybe this isn't worth the discussion. But the question of the article was, is America post-Christian? And he introduced with the one guy who says, no, it isn't. Look at everybody's still excited about the Pope. His reply was, yes, it is. I think it is still post-Christian. And I think I probably read about half the article and I stopped and I decided... this is a dumb conversation. Like, what is the relevance of the question?
The question should be, is America post-Christ, not post-Christian? And he's talking about, you know, people resonating with all these religious-ish things and, you know, images and icons. And that's, you know, your telltale mark of people who have replaced, you know, an actual life-changing experience with Christ with just kind of the superstitious ritual of religion. And who cares if America is still in that box of one religion or another, as opposed to actually having the salvation power of God in your life? I mean, those are very different questions. They're very different issues.
But the answer, either way, like I just feel like it doesn't do any. Doesn't matter, mm-hmm. right? Like let's say it's Christ. Does America follow Christ? Yes or no? That's the question we're asking. So if the answer is no, what do we do? Well, we live like Jesus, and we try to get other people to join the kingdom. Right. And then let's say you ask the question, say, does America follow Christ? And let's say we got with a yes. Mm-hmm. We say, well, yes, but not everybody. So what are we going to do? We're going to live like Christ and try to get more people into the kingdom. Right. And so I just, like, this, I mean, this is a long article. I mean, a really long article between two people that seem to love Jesus.
Eight paragraphs doing this.
And I thought for good night, this does not matter to me at all. Mm-hmm. Like, this question doesn't, I don't seem to care because I'm not sure that it does anything. Like, am I missing something that I care about the answer to that question?
No. I think you see the forest for the trees.
We're incredibly self-centered as a society to where these kind of articles are constantly written. Who cares? It does not matter if we're just talking about America. Like, I see these kind of articles all the time where it's just like, is America this? Is America that? When it comes to the concept of the church and when it comes to the concept of the relationship that people have with whatever religion they want to identify with. And it kills me that so many people get caught up in what is America doing? What is America doing? When we should stop thinking so much about that, because we're not trying to win over a country. We're not trying to win over a government. That is not what we are trying to do. Jesus didn't call us to go out and win over our government. He calls us to a completely different kingdom. And by doing so, we go out and speak to the people that are currently in that government, Americans, and that we win them over for Christ, not for some different country that we need to be involved in. It's all about winning people over for a heart for Christ. It does not matter what country they're in. It does not matter what flag they're currently running under. No matter who they are or where they're from, they need to be talked to about Christ and come to his kingdom.
Boob is a Bernie Sanders supporter. He's creating this one world government business.
I don't. Yes, exactly. You're right. I'm not going to say I'm pro Bernie Sanders on this show, but what I'm going to say is I am absolutely for a one government world because I know that there's a better kingdom.
It just depends on the government, right? I'll submit to a Jesus.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And actually, that was a lot. That was a lot of the political reaction. I thought, like, because of how the Pope talks about people. He instantly became a Bernie Sanders sympathizer, as far as our political infrastructure says, and that's I don't know. I feel like sometimes we're not talking about the right things. Here's and I don't hear me wrong in this. Like, there are legitimate issues in trying to run a flipping government. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a difficult thing. And like, although I'm not fighting for, like, there's a greater kingdom that I care about. I do still live here, and I think mm-hmm. we have responsibility within the infrastructure that we are in to use it. In good ways. And so, like, I think there's a little bit of don't hear me saying that, like, we just start our own commune of stuff where we can't interact. That's we can't be blind to the thing that we live in, like, into the nation that we live in. However, I want our nation to reflect our priorities, and my priorities are, like, I care about people. And the question is that, like, if you look at the things that us as a nation cares about, does that actually reflect what we care about? And if it does, what does that say about us as Christ followers? Understanding that Jesus is not president, but, like, if I have an option to live in a country of where I have choices, I want the country to reflect the things that I care about. And I'm not sure with the discussion sometimes that we're having, that we're actually having conversations about things that I care about. We're perpetuating something else that I'm not sure speaks well of what our values are.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about this many times in the show that too often we see people that are pushing for a moral America. And I think that if we focus
and shift our attention rather than trying to fix the government that we're currently in and win people over for the government of Christ and the kingdom he's in, that is going to supersede and then eventually take care of the government that we're trying to fix.
So there's a there is a millennial view. It's
we'll call it my generation.
No, it's post. No. It's like a biblical millennial view. It's post millennialism. Mm-hmm. And the thought process is that you should expect Christianity to become stronger and more influential. And so, whereas the other two millennial views, the amillennial view, the premillennial view, doesn't expects the church to kind of be raptured out, and then there's this time of tribulation. Postmillennialism, part of that thought structure says that the church will continue to get more powerful and will use its influence in governments and such to make positive impacts on the world around it using that existing infrastructure. And so, like to a certain extent, what we believe about the end of the world does actually influence our expectation. And so where I say, hey man, we're fighting the wrong battles and we're doing it through the wrong means, like there's an end of times view that says, no, these are the direct means of which the church will be influential. We need to elect candidates. We need to do X, Y, and Z because that should be expected that the church will continue to grow and increase in power using the governmental infrastructure that exists. And so people that love Jesus believe that, and so like they will lean on that infrastructure in ways that otherwise I wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't understand how you can make decisions based on that. That is just a random guess. I feel like you don't have any biblical proof of that at all.
I think there are smart people that love Jesus that believe that. I'll put it that way.
I didn't say they weren't smart. I just said that I don't know how you can believe that because you don't have any proof of that.
There's a biblical basis to it. I wouldn't subscribe to it, but like they're using scripture.
I understand
for
you want to make friends and say nice things about
I don't
people.
Need friends.
I get it. You don't want to cause trouble. I understand completely. Smart people, blah blah blah, don't believe.
I admitted on conservative Christian radio that there are forms of universal health care that I could be for. I feel like I'm not making friends here today.
How the heck could you love Jesus and be against that? Hey, we want to make sure people can get health care needs. No, I hate that. I don't understand how you could be against that on the onset. Now,
here's the thing. There are, though.
Yeah, they just frame the question really well. What they do is they start talking about how much it costs. And that's how they get people against it.
But my God, money will be upset.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, well,
that's
sorry.
The issue.
Someone has roasted mammon.
All right, you're listening live from the pad.
Hold on. That should be convicting to you. You understand me? If you've said something like, universal health care is a terrible idea because I deserve health care because I work, you should feel like a jerk face and someone who is not caring for people. Because that is generally the argument. I get this conversation all the time with people at work. Well, I deserve good health care because I work. Yeah, that's how we measure human dignity and the love for others, right? Because one guy works and another guy doesn't. He obviously doesn't deserve a life at all. Why don't you just shoot him and save the time, right? If that's your actual view on life. He doesn't deserve health care because, let's say he doesn't have a job, but you do have a job. Why don't you save everybody the hassle and kill the man? Because you're not going to give him health care anyway. It's the exact same argument, just put in a real blunt corner.
You just shoot him is what you're saying.
Yeah, just shoot him.
Hey, I'm not
old Yeller style.
I'm probably not going to work for the next few months. Good, let me go get the gun.
Yeah, if you're not going to work into the healthcare system, you don't deserve it. Whammo.
There's something about having a succubus, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. And these are legitimate problems. I don't know how to solve because I mean there are people that jack with the system.
Well, of course they are.
Thieves.
Hey, listen, Jesus prepared you for this, man.
That's
Jesus
true.
Totally prepared you for the succubus.
You're going to find that in every system. Oh,
there's man.
Every system that gets created, you're going to find
as
something
the Lord
that
predicted,
manipulates it.
Same with the salt water on Mars. Wait. Knew it was coming.
Here's the thing, I guess, is I was trying to think of a biblical example of where Jesus did, like, helped a guy. And doggone it, it's that guy at the, is it Siloam?
Yeah, the pool of Siloam.
The lazy guy. Like,
he still
healed that man.
Yes. That's Jesus.
Man.
He still gives it to you.
He still did it. And you're like, that guy's
but
a
he only
sucker.
Healed the one.
Yeah, but that guy did not have troubles.
I'm just saying, but I don't know how far you take that. How many didn't he heal? I don't know.
Wait, so you don't think any...
Well, no, I don't know. I'm just saying I don't know how far you can
so
take
Jesus
that illustration.
Jesus doesn't believe in universal health care, just singular health care during the day.
I choose you.
Actually, I suppose by that standard, like the phrase, neither shall I condemn you, go and sin no more, applies only to one person.
Yeah, just you. Everyone else condemned.
it's really on my choice, sir. Do not use me as an example. I just do what I want.
You know what, Dan? Remind me to critique your sermons later. Your broad principles are really going to get whittled down.
Actually, you know, now that I think about it, the only Blood Moon End of Times discussion that I got on Facebook came from you, Dan. So,
from me?
Yeah, from you.
What did I do?
You posted something about the Blood Moons coming, you know, End of Times. How should Christians respond to Pathway Church? That was the only thing showed up on my Facebook about End of Times craziness.
And it was mostly take a breath.
Yeah. I definitely like the tone of it, but yeah. I didn't get any kind of those crazy antichrist issues.
I know. Here's what I think. I think I know the right people because I saw a lot of that stuff, which means I know the right people who hear about Jesus.
Yeah, I saw a little.
I saw quite a bit of the people freaking out, thinking that this was going to be a big deal, and then arguing with people that did not care at all. And it was, I love reading that stuff. Like half the stuff, admittedly. And I've been struggling with this for years, and we've talked about this multiple times. Like, I struggle on how much I actually know about what some of these dudes are talking about, because they're throwing out terms that I'm just like, I frankly don't care. But I kind of just look for Jesus's name every once in a while. Like, if I'm reading through one of those long, like, 40-comment things, I try and pick out how many times I can see Jesus. And if I can't see him that many times, I'm like, that just does not seem like the kind of conversation
seven popes,
I give it.
Two Jesus, nope.
Yeah, exactly. 42 comments, one Jesus. That's not the conversation I need to get into. That is obviously not the one I need to be in, and I back out. But I did see quite a few of that, yes. It happens.
I saw mostly just really poor quality pictures of people saying, see what I saw? I'm like, yeah, we all can see it.
I couldn't think of the right quip. But like, what I kept thinking is that taking pictures with your cell phone produces the MSNBC of lunar moon photos. Like the real low rent thing that people like you turn on the cameras and say we should do this because we can, not because we should,
and let the world see it.
Yeah, and make sure everyone hears about it. It's like watching MSNBC, looking at people post cell phone pics of the lunar moon or the blood moon.
I saw someone come up with a picture that was just as comparable to an actual picture on Snapchat. Like they took a picture of the moon and then they took a picture of the sky by it and then kind of drew in a red thing in there and it looked the exact same. One was Snapchat, him drawing it. One was the actual moon.
See, but they're already scandalizing it. Like, it's a red moon. It's not a blood moon. It's just a red moon.
Yeah, I know. They specifically call it that in this instance, though, when there's an eclipse.
Because it's what?
It's a supermoon.
It's red.
When it's closer, it's closer, and it has the lunar eclipse.
Why does that make it a blood moon?
I don't know. It's just what they call it.
It's the full lunar eclipse
because of its
paired with a supermoon, and it only happens every like 30 years.
You're stigmatizing it.
No, that's true. It's
what color is your blood?
In practical purposes,
blue. But I don't call my car a blood car.
Hey man, you should start calling your car a blood car.
Hop into the murder mobile.
Get the blood mobile. The Lord's going to take it away at the resurrection.
Hey man, I just saw a red car. Where's Jesus?
You guys hungry? I've got some blood apples and blood tomato sauce coming up here for you.
That's terrifying. This all sounds
and spaghetti and blood sauce.
You're part of the propaganda wheel.
That's true. I've accepted the hype. You're listening to Live from the Path.
Bernie Sanders will never let this stand.
Here we go. It's will committed Christians be committed to an asylum? Let's see. A new study purports to show that those who hold traditional views about marriage are psychotic. Will studies like this lead to more Christians being punished for their views? The study by Giancomo Chioccia et al. Psychoticism, immature defense mechanisms, and a fearful attachment style are associated with a higher homophobic attitude. Here's the thing. I don't know who works in these industries where they do the studies and stuff, but I mean, would it be harmful to hire a guy that helps with the titles? Because they're always like 8 sentences long. They don't have any whiz bang to them. That like, my study is titled "Psychoticism, Immature Defense Mechanisms, and a Fearful Attachment Style Are Associated with a Higher Homophobic Attitude." Done. I mean, it rolls off the tongue.
Shouldn't they be more concerned that I believe with all my heart that the dude was murdered brutally and 3 days later came back to life?
That's a good point, Dan.
I mean,
your social view is pale in comparison to believing in the resurrection of a man.
I believe the guy is alive, and he's coming back, and he's going to judge the world.
Yeah. And he apparently psychotic. Wants you to eat his flesh and drink his blood, too.
I'm 100% certain that he sent angels to destroy cities, and they're really worried about my thought process on marriage.
That's true. We're not making it past the initial questionnaire. Do you see dead people? I've heard of some.
Absolutely.
Well,
they were dead.
Yeah. We are straight up going into the loony bin.
One guy rose from the dead, and as far as this book I read tells me, a bunch of them were also walking around from the dead.
Right?
During and I will time. Too.
How do you know you're going to heaven with them? Well, I went in a pool. Some guy held me under. And I came back up. Everybody applauded.
Hey, man, I took a shower this one time, and then I came back, and now I'm going to be able to be come back and resurrected.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you people got to smell good. yeah, you're right. This study was unnecessary. Good point, Dan.
We're all insane.
It claims to find that homophobia is associated with psychosis and other forms of mental illness. The study, however, operationalizes both the dependent and independent variables, what is being explained and what explains, homophobia and psychosis, such that anyone who holds a Christian worldview will be labeled both psychotic and homophobic. So, unsurprisingly, the authors found a correlation. Yeah. In statistics, an intervening variable explains the relationship between an independent and dependent variable. In this case, the intervening variable is a Christian worldview, which means Christians, non-Christians steeped in a Christian culture, or simply those with a worldview similar to a Christian worldview. In other words, the authors defined certain Christian views as homophobic, other religious views as psychotic, and Abracadabra found that some people show signs of both homophobic and psychosis.
Okay, here's what's psychotic.
Okay.
30 years ago, being homosexual was a mental illness. Now, not believing in homosexuality, they think is a mental illness. And I believe Satan's involved, which makes me mentally ill
there's no reason to study this thing anymore. I feel like we're on the outs. Yeah, we're not.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So homophobia, that in definition, that would be the fear of homosexuality, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, but you're thinking about it scientifically. This is a political word. Okay. How is it used politically?
Annoyingly, that's how it's used politically.
Exactly. It's basically.
I'm like, hey, man, I'm not afraid of gay people.
Right.
Like, I have never run away from a homosexual person. Like, oh no, and ran. Like, I've never found myself there. I can disagree with someone without being fearful of them from a phobia perspective. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just because I'm like, hey, man, that's probably not a good idea. And you know, I believe in a God of this entire universe that's bigger than anything you've ever even imagined. That says, yeah, no. That like that, and I'm therefore afraid of you and need to run away.
Yeah, that's tricky. All right,
I don't know if it's tricky.
I kind of want to take the quiz.
Let's take the quiz.
Let's do it.
No, it's not available.
Oh,
bummer.
Well, we need to contact these people and say, hey, we're possibly psychotic. Can we get your quiz?
I'm not an inept boob who can't click a hyperlink. I said I want to take the quiz.
I didn't know
it's not available.
I thought you meant
because
it didn't apply.
A time perspective. Hey, maybe you don't need to jump down our throats and think we're not saying you're capable.
I'd like to take it if only I had some encouragement. And then I would do it.
Hey, Ben, you can do it. Click on the link.
Thanks, boys.
We care about you.
You're listening to Live from the Path. We're hanging out here every Monday night at livefromthepath.org. Hey, we've already ruined the show. A big thanks to Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team. Go to eisenhowerteam.com. You can find the current listings that Bob and his team have out there. And maybe you're not sure whether you want to sell your place and you just want to, I don't know, get an idea what you could sell it for and what's out there. Here's the deal. I check that stuff probably every 2 months. I just think, hey, what's out? Maybe something pop up. And maybe the Lord's got something for me moving out. So I call Bob, and Bob figures out what's out there for me, and he sends me a bunch of stuff. You can also give him a call at 515-979-2883. That's Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team. Go to eisenhowerteam.com. And I don't know. What do people say on the radio? Tell them the Live from the Path boys sent you. And I don't know. It's not going to really do anything. It's just people do that to advertise. So anyway, big thanks to Bob. Let's see. Mike, so you got some Dear Life from the Path. Ooh.
Yeah, I do. You want to do one? It'll go fast.
Okay, yeah. We need a fast one.
Ready? Yep. Dear Life from the Path. I'm a woman who has always had trouble with women friends who like to call and chat. It has never really been my thing. One of them never asks if I'm busy. She just plunges into a conversation that usually lasts an hour. I never call her. If she asks me to return her call, I'll wait a day or two. I'm afraid to tell her I don't like spending that kind of time on the phone because I know it will hurt her feelings. I've lost friends in the past because of this. I think instead of avoiding her calls and feeling guilty, I'd rather not have her as a friend. I'd be happier reading a book or working on my hobbies. Am I being silly?
Seriously?
What?
Wow.
Get over yourself.
They're trying to improve themselves, booba.
No. Mike, there is no argument you're going to give me right now. I do not care.
Unreasonable.
I am not saying this woman needs to spend an hour on the phone every single day with this person. But seriously, you're not going to be her friend because you don't communicate that way.
Oh, crap. You disagree with me.
Okay. Maybe get over yourself. Have a conversation with the woman. Cut her off in half an hour. Just say, hey, it's been great talking to you. I do have to get on with my life or whatever you want to say. But that doesn't mean you completely out her as your friend because you don't want to spend time on the phone with her.
Well, answer me this.
Yes.
How often do you spend time in a room with nothing else going on all by yourself for 5 or 6 hours at a time? Does that make you uncomfortable?
No, it doesn't make me uncomfortable.
You sit. So, when's the last time you've done it? 6 hours straight.
Saturday.
Just sitting in a room, no TV, no radio, no phone.
Oh, I didn't just sit there by myself alone, doing nothing.
That's exactly what I was asking.
Okay, sorry, I thought you meant just being alone with, as in no one was around me. No, I had my phone because I was watching Netflix.
Yeah, okay, so here's what I'm saying, is that you are designed a certain way, and this woman is designed a certain way. And that kind of stuff of interacting with that amount of people for that long makes them really uncomfortable.
That's why I'm saying don't do it for that long, but that doesn't mean you need to unfriend her because you don't want to sit there and talk.
Yeah, you got to get rid of this woman. She's dragging you down.
Oh my gosh,
give
you're
her
ridiculous.
Free health care and send her packing.
I think I lean toward Mike's view on this.
Oh my gosh.
I'm a father of daughters who have the same, they live the struggle. They don't want to sit around and have girl chat all the time and talk about makeup and boys, and they have a life to live.
Oh, yes, I would agree with that. You may have a life to live, but that doesn't mean you can't stop and talk to somebody.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you can cut them off, and you usually do, but they don't listen, and you have to keep trying and trying, and pretty soon you just hang up and say, my battery died or something. I don't know, but I don't know if that ever happens.
I feel like we're making an extreme out of this situation. This doesn't happen that often.
It's not an indictment on all of humanity. There's one woman who has a temperament, and she just likes to talk a lot. He is very much not of that temperament. They're not going to really get along in terms of their communication styles, which is sort of important for foundations of relationships. It doesn't mean that he has anything against her particularly. It's just her way of communicating really doesn't sync up very well with him.
Yeah.
It's hard to build a basis of a relationship without that.
So you cut off all ties with this person entirely?
Yeah.
Well, that's I don't think you have to be mean.
Because that's what this person is saying they do.
I think you should do it respectfully, but just say, hey, here's who I am, here's who you are, and I really don't see a future with this.
Yeah.
And it's okay to say that. There's a lot of humanity that I'm not going to have a future with. And it's okay. I still pick my friends.
How much
Everyone
of your
does.
Life do you end up, if you don't do things like this, how much of your life gets tied up in the niceties where you could have actually been doing something meaningful and you're caught up for 58 minutes of a 2-minute conversation and the other 58 minutes you've wasted there placating them? You've wasted 58 minutes out of that hour. Now multiply that times your life and look what you've done.
Being a friend to that person
that's
is a waste of time?
You're not a friend. You're being a wall.
Now, yeah, you're
being a friend.
Yeah, you're a false friend. Like, the right thing to do is to say, look, I can't be, you can't be what they need you for. There are other people that can provide that, who want to listen to your stories and who enjoy that kind of thing. If you're looking for someone that you want to engage in your life and listen to that stuff, you're just not the right person.
All right, here's the point where I'm disagreeing with you guys, because it seems like that's exactly it, is you're not leaving any kind of room for actual self-sacrifice in terms of your relationships. You're just evaluating everyone based on what can I get out of it. And, you know, anyone who doesn't perfectly sync up and meet all of your needs in terms of communication
style. Now, the first
style.
2 minutes of the conversation was me listening to you.
Right.
It wasn't saying, hey, listen to me for 2 minutes. I listened to you for two, which was the meat and potatoes of what you had to say. And then you talked for another 58. I gave you the two. You stole the 58. You, sir.
Or you could have just been generous and given them the 58. And then
I don't have 58 to give. There's other people to talk to.
If that's the case, then tell them
that. You're talking to other people.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
And that's exactly what she did. She said, look, we can't do this anymore. If you refuse to stop stealing the 58 from my wife, my kids, and other people, then I'm going to have to let you go.
That is a different premise than what this person is putting out there.
Here's the thing.
They're not saying
someone 58 minutes, you have to take 58 minutes from somebody else.
No,
that's
this person is taking 58 minutes away from themselves.
That's what you're assuming.
What was their conversation? What did they want to spend their time doing?
They said, I want to play with my kids and love on Jesus.
No. They said, I want to work on myself and do things I want to do. There's a difference between wasting your time and then taking that away from another person, which I agree with. If you got a family and not sit there for an hour, I understand that. But at the same point in time, if you can't give yourself, okay, I'll listen to this person for an hour, rather than sitting down and doing nothing and just building myself up, you need to give up a little bit of your time just to build a relationship with this gal. Even if you don't want to be your best friend, maybe she just wants somebody to listen to her. Do it.
See, now this is a perfect example, because you talked for a minute, which was helpful, and the other 3 minutes you were talking, I gifted you.
I was talking for maybe 45 seconds, Mike.
Why can't, I guess it depends on the hobby, but is there a reason you can't listen on the phone, maybe on speaker, and do your whatever?
Isn't that placating?
My wife will do her dishes.
Yes,
do the dishes
that is
and
completely
clean
placating.
Stuff while she talks to long-winded people.
I'm going to put you on speaker and then pretend like I'm listening while I'm gluing together this wooden horse.
I suppose if they don't care, it doesn't matter. Hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us so far. If you're on the Truth Network 99.3 FM, we've got to let you go. If you want to hear the end result of this Dear Live from the Path plus some more, you should hang out for the podcast. If you're on the podcast, we'll be right back with you. Please be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path. What if the friend doesn't care? Like they're centered on themselves so much that they just want to talk and they really don't care if you're listening.
Then Andrew's compromise might actually work out.
That's what I'm saying. That it just depends on who it is.
She focused a lot of housework done with the long-winded people.
Somewhere you're going to have a 2-minute conversation where the two of you hash out, hey, here's how this could move forward.
Here's the deal. I've called someone from my wife's phone so they would stop talking to me.
You've called them?
I was talking to somebody on the phone and they wouldn't stop talking, so I dialed the number with my wife's phone to make it look like my wife was calling. And then I hung them both up.
That's weird how Gerald always calls me when I'm talking to you.
Yeah, Dan, I got to go. Then as soon as they pick up, I hang up both like it was an accidental pocket dial.
That is such a passive-aggressive way to respond.
It really
Mike,
is.
That's not you.
Here's the deal. I've come to terms with the fact that I'm an hour-long talker, and I will not disagree with that. We all know that. I'm the hour-long talker. I am perfectly fine with someone going to me, hey, man, you know I would be happy to listen to you for the next hour. I just don't have time. Can I talk to you at a different time? Yeah, sure. No, I understand that. I'm sorry I called and then tried to waste your time. I'll talk to you later. Or at half an hour, you go, hey, man, it's been good talking to you, but I do have to go. Like, I have to do with that with people, but that doesn't mean I don't accept their phone calls or I just try and completely unfriend them.
Oh, boy.
What are you giving of yourself if you're really just saying, hey, no, I'm never going to talk to you because you talk all the time and we don't communicate the same way, so therefore we can't be friends anymore? That is what this woman is trying to get across.
She's doing it like 4 times a week, though.
Yeah, but friendships require a maintenance of time and effort and energy and sacrifice. So, you know, the alternative is you can just respectfully say, hey, look, we got to live our lives differently.
I'm actually very similar to that. Like, maybe 5-minute conversations are good, but what I'll do, I don't care, like, whoever's talking, I'll just start screaming at the top of my lungs until they stop talking.
That would do.
And they'll give me, like, these strange looks.
Andrew solves that problems.
Hey, man, I suppose that would definitely get me to stop talking.
And then as soon as they start talking again, after they've given me the strange look, I just start screaming again. And it usually just ends after that.
Here's
the
thing. You guys are... In all seriousness, like, you have to... You can support people like that to the best of your abilities, but you know when it's time to quit. Like, when they seriously... I feel like I have to... The biggest commodity that I have is time and how I choose to spend it. And, like, when people start encroaching on time that is not allotted to them, that starts to become a problem. Because that they're literally stealing it from somebody else. They're not stealing it from me or my leisure time. They're stealing it from me interacting with somebody else with their long-winded crappiness. And so, like, I feel like you honestly have to put a stop to that or you will secretly hate them. And you'll be mad at them every time you see them, very similar of the way this lady is.
But Dave says you're not being gracious.
I can be gracious for X amount of time, and then I have to stop. Yeah, then I can't be gracious for two other people.
He just has to manage his time really well because he has so little of it.
I can get on board with that. That is fair. Mm-hmm. If you are still in talking to this person, but completely unfriending them is ridiculous. Yeah. That's what this woman is asking. Should I unfriend this person just because I'm not able to have conversation with her or stop her from talking? That is ridiculous. Yeah. I understand the time is a commodity, and I'm not saying you have to spend 2 hours talking to this person every single day.
Sure.
What does secular say?
I don't know.
Isn't that kind of the concept of this?
She hung up.
Yeah. Here's the deal. It was very similar to Boova's lame argument, so I skipped that. basically, she said you have to be honest to a point, which is basically where we ended up. It's 50-50 of yellow belly. Waste a bunch of time. Here we go. Dear Life in the Path. My mom's recently separated from her husband. They're in the process of getting divorced, and she is already talking to another man. She has known him since high school, but they only recently reconnected again. Last night, they finally decided to go out. She says they are just friends, in parentheses, but she got home at 5:30 in the a.m., wasted. She woke up 30 minutes before work, then passed out in my bed. I think she's moving way too fast. She isn't a teenager anymore, let alone divorced. Am I wrong for being upset with her, or should I support her? Embarrassed in Texas.
This is a lifestyle. This is her mom and her husband. So it's not even... She's already on at least number 3. Did I hear that correctly? I mean...
Most likely number 3.
It's not even her dad.
If you're assuming that she was married to the father in the first place, yes.
Well, okay, good point, good point. Yeah, this gal's in a self-destructive lifestyle.
Is that no support?
That's Dan's advice.
Right. I'm slightly confused. This is the child emailing us about their mother and the mother's husband?
The mother, yes.
Mother's new boyfriend.
And what's the actual question?
And there's, like, yeah. a divorce going on, but divorce hasn't happened yet, and there's...
Mom and dad split up. They're not technically completely split up yet. Mom is now possibly dating another man.
All right. I got it now.
I think we're past the possibly point, but all right.
Yeah. Well,
I would call her involved.
They could be just friends till 5:30 in the a.m.
It's complicated.
Very friendly.
Yeah. The Facebook status would be it's complicated. That's
Red
right.
moon, walk, light. Wait. I couldn't even say it in one sentence.
Blood moon's happening.
Blood moon, romantic walks.
I don't think it's unreasonable to have a conversation with her. Like, yeah, you're the daughter or the son, the daughter's son, but that's not unreasonable to have a conversation with your mom. Just say, hey, you know, can you give me a little bit of the information here? Because I'm a little bit uncomfortable about the fact that you haven't even really divorced the person that I call my parent. And now you're just friends with another man you've known since high school. And you were got home hammered at 5:30 in the morning, which there is no age when that is a responsible situation to be involved in.
Yeah, Mom, get a hold of yourself.
Or no situation where that is a responsible thing to do.
She needs a friend who will call and talk to her for an hour.
Yeah, it sounds like she needs to talk for about an hour on the phone. Maybe
just 1 hour you can solve it?
Well, no, it'll be 1 hour four times a week.
Okay.
And that person will need to be gracious with their time and not unfriend that person.
I can solve this in 2 minutes.
Mike, you can solve anything in 2 minutes.
Let's hear it.
But then you don't solve it.
Basically, all you need to say is, hey, your behavior is not going to end up in a joyful place for you, and I can't be a party to it. You need something, you come let me know. I'll point you to joy. Until then, stay out of my bed, you creeper.
Stay out of my bed.
Hang it up.
Stay out of my bed.
Don't be passing out on my bed.
Yeah, done. I feel like I've solved it. Anything else you want to bloviate about?
I'd like to know how old she is.
Doesn't matter, Dan. Always joy at any age.
The daughter is like, is she old enough to be on her own? I mean, can she kick her mom out?
I think this woman's kind of part of a cycle of just self-destructive relationships that needs to really be addressed. Otherwise, this next one's just going to implode just like all the others. So, you know, what's that deep need that she's trying to fill? What is it that is so, you know, inadequate that really needs to be addressed?
And that's definitely a two-minute conversation.
What I'm saying. Done deal.
You
here we go. Secular says.
Just read the movie.
That is not the situation, though. You can't just tail that in every circumstance that shows up like it's 2 minutes of deep diving. That woman that was in the other circumstance was calling and going on at long periods of time all the time. Not, hey, I could really use some help, but you got 2 minutes to straighten me out or I'm bailing. That's not the same situation.
I was mocking Mike for his comments earlier, not saying that that's something that needs to be happening.
I've set you straight.
Yep.
Yeah, totally. Completely agreed. No, I wasn't.
In under 2 minutes.
Yeah. Great job. 35 seconds in.
There we go. Secular is, oh boy, she's going to go on some kind of long-winded STD conversation.
I don't have time for that.
I'm going to skip a good portion of it. I don't know how old your mother is or how long she's been married to the man she's divorcing, but if she has been out of the dating scene for any length of time, you need to talk calmly with her and not appear judgmental. I'm concerned because she may have had unprotected sexual contact with a person she hasn't seen since high school, and a lot could have happened in his life since then.
That's pull out of the air.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was unprotected, too.
That's the most concerning part of this situation.
Yeah, yeah. Not the fact that you're self-destructing, you're showing up at 5:30 in the morning hammered and sleeping in your daughter's bed. No, that's not a concern at all, but sexual contact with this man from high school. She should not be intimate with anyone unless she knows his sexual history and that he can't give her an STD. Holy cats.
Unless she's married. Yeah, this sounds secular.
Wow. That's pretty much all we're going to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the herp is number 4 on my list of things I'm concerned about here.
Where do you want to eat? Do you have the herp? Where do you want to eat? Have you been tested?
Is that a fever blister? Oh.
What?
You want to go to Dutch Street? You taking steroids for anything?
It's funny. I don't think I've ever heard secular come off so religiously as they did just here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Hey, how you doing? STD much?
Do you have a list of your sexual partners since the last time we spoke? It's been 15 years since high school. That's a lot of nights.
Boy, like it's... I don't think...
Do you have to keep a book?
I'm not seeing in such great relief secular's focused on such a... something that says I don't really care about you as a person. Like for all the society has grown to where we are concerned about people's mental state and impact of other abuse besides physical.
It's just I don't want you spreading communicable diseases.
Yeah, exactly. As long as having random sex with people doesn't create disease in your body, I feel like this is, you know, this is really what I'm concerned about.
You know, if you had a condom, I'd be okay with this. Yeah.
It's like, the same response would be like a guy wrote in and says, look, I've been down on my luck. I'm currently homeless. I'm having a hard time finding a job. Can you point me in any direction? She says, do you realize how many diseases there are sleeping outside? You need to stop that directly.
Yeah, you need to fix that.
That's basically her response. I don't care anything about what you're saying or the root of any of your problems or actually how to solve them. Do you realize the disease-ridden box that you're sleeping in is disgusting?
It's like going to WebMD with your issues. It's like, hey, WebMD, I'm really depressed recently. I got a lot going on. I'm sleeping around with different sexual partners because I can't find fulfillment and love from anybody in general, and I'm really upset in life. And WebMD goes, hey, man, sexual diseases are possible. You need to take care of that yeah. situation.
By the way, take L-Dopa. It'll fix it all.
I'm so lonely. Pursue your destructive lifestyle in a safe physical manner.
Make sure that you don't disturb others.
Yeah. Find yourself a nice dating website.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Dear Life hey, from man. The Path, my second husband likes to touch me often. He massages what? My back, rubs my legs, and runs his hands through my hair. This is new for me. My first husband never acted this way. I have been married to husband number two for 15 months. My question is this normal? Yeah, no.
What? Yeah. Is it normal to have physical contact with your husband?
Hey, listen. I've tried to run my hand through my wife's hair recently. And maybe it is the going on 15, 16 years that I've known this woman, but it just wasn't greeted with the, hey, how you doing? I was okay.
What, did you have product in her hair?
Well, here's the deal. It looked because I pet the dog the same way.
Scratch after, behind her ear.
And it doesn't seem affectionate. It seems demeaning.
Are you feeling for ticks? Or
I just like to touch soft hair because mine is slowly leaving me. And I'd like to know what it feels like to have lustrous hair.
Boy, so, well, I don't know what type of like Gerd Wilhelm she was married to before. Did they have children? I'd like to know how it happened. Say, right?
Did they have two separate beds? Good night, sweetheart. Good night. I'll be going to my room now.
As will I. I'm afraid of STDs. Secular has warned. We shall listen.
You touched my leg. Is this normal?
After 15 months, you asked this question. Like, was there a dating period where this guy was just not touching you at all, and then all of a sudden he one day was just like, hey.
Like when he was married, he's done it correctly. No touchy-touchy, touchy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
do touchy-touchy.
I feel bad for husband number one. He's missed out on all the benefits of being husband number one.
Yeah, no doubt.
Maybe that's why he's not
I was gonna say,
there anymore.
Maybe that's why there's a husband number two.
Although if that was the case, if she was out seeking something else, her surprise at leg touching from husband number two seems odd.
Hey, I've always been looking for physical connection with my husband, but now that I've got it, it's kind of weird.
He's a little perverted.
He just touches me.
He touched my thigh.
Does this woman have no friends? You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like this is the conversation I walk in with ladies. Like, well, he's just not as affectionate as he used to be. Like these things get discussed.
Yeah.
Except for on husband number one, she's completely shocked. Like, so my husband, like, touched me on the leg. Does that happen to you guys? Oh, yeah, yeah, that happens. Yeah, sometimes it's fine. Yeah. Like, I mean, I feel like it should have came up with husband number one with the lady time that, hey, man, I feel like that man doesn't come anywhere near me and sleeps in another room. Don't you think that's weird?
No, having lady friends is a good idea.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
Yeah, get lady friends.
So, in light of not having lady friends, we're here asking advice from Life from the Path.
Yikes.
A room full
okay,
of dudes.
Okay, this is scary. This is really scary. All right.
Yeah, I would. My advice is to give him a high five and say, keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
Love, Ben.
Love, Ben.
And you're going to have to feed me more than twice a day.
Like, if this is not making you uncomfortable, then I wouldn't be concerned about it. If you're asking because this makes you uncomfortable,
this is a conversation like, you need to have with husband.
If she's trying to understand, like, I kind of get it. Like, I think we can be sympathetic to the thought process that you were used to dealing with a person, right? You're married, you have an intimate relationship with them, and they don't act the same way that this person is. And so I think the question is probably more coming from she doesn't know how to act in that circumstance. And so the only question that the way you're going to frame it is what he's doing normal because you don't know how to act in that circumstance. And frankly, it's easier to hear, no, he's abnormal than, oh, no, you actually don't know how to behave here.
Right.
And so my guess is that's the root of it. He's just affectionate in a different way mm-hmm. than her first husband was. And she doesn't necessarily know how to react to that or show him either whether she likes it or doesn't like it. Mm-hmm. And so my guess is that's probably the root of it. And the truth is yeah, just talk to him. If you like it, then, go
with
it.
You should affirm him with a Pillsbury Doughboy style. That's how dudes know that you dig what's happening.
Yeah, going forward, give them positive feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say, hey, I like that.
I like that.
All right, not so much on the kneecap, but, you know,
yeah,
I like the other
thing.
Yeah,
a weird place to land, buddy. Woohoo! No.
Elbows are pervy, Craig. Pervy.
Not when I'm watching NYPD Blue. You know better. Okay, Secular's advice is, yeah, that's normal. Many women...
We spent too much time on it.
Many women would consider you lucky to have a spouse who is so affectionate. Different strokes for different folks. Enjoy it while it lasts. Hey, listen, all ladies like affection. It is not different strokes for different folks. Ladies like to have affection. Now, you got to figure out what avenue in which they like it most. Some don't like you hanging all over them, making them, making them uncomfortable. You know what I'm saying? Just touch them on the smaller back when you put them through a door. They love that. That's the kind of stuff you want to do.
When you put them through a door.
Yeah, you say
it. Hey, man, don't say that to me because I've actually put a person through a door before, and it's a lot different of a situation.
You say, go outside. And then you put your hand on the smaller back and just...
Shove them through a door.
You don't shove them. You just lead them out. Here we go. Time to go.
Lead them. Okay.
With the kids.
You've been listening to Life in the Path.
I wrote a book. It's called Mike's Ways or the Highways.
Two-minute conversation.
Where's my guitar?
All right. This is rough times for you, but we're going to have to let you go. The world can't tolerate any more of this. You've been listening to Life from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. Make sure you check out the website during the week, lifefromthepath.org. Also, if you have feedback on the show, if it's good feedback, we want to hear it. info@lifefromthepath.org. Oh, mercy.
Oh, dear.
If it's bad, you go ahead and let the radio station know. They deal with that stuff.
I hear full guitar.
The back.
All right, we got to get out of here. I'm letting you go. Thanks for listening to Life from the Path.
Ben, save us. Save us, Ben.
You're gone.
Lead him out by the small.